Consumer Affairs Committee this day, Monday the 17th. We'll start with testimony from Greg Hickman.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Hickman. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Employment Department. Deborah Lincoln asked me to send along her apology. She's out of state and had hoped to get an earlier flight in to appear before you, but she was unable to do so. But we very much appreciate the opportunity to share a brief overview about the Oregon Employment Department. If I can turn your attention to the screen brochure that's before you. It's entitled Funding Oregon's Unemployment Insurance System. On that front page, on the bottom right corner, is our mission statement. And the mission of the Employment Department is to support business and promote employment. The way we do that is through the administration of an insurance program. We pay benefits to eligible workers who are unemployed through no fault of their own, and that's our unemployment insurance program. We also support business by screening and referring the best qualified job seekers we can find to employers who have job openings and are looking for workers. And we also provide services and resources to job seekers as they look for work as well. That's called our Employment Services Program. We provide quality workforce and economic information to many customers throughout the state and nationally through our Workforce and Economic Research Division. And we help children and parents access safe, high-quality, and affordable child care through our child care division. Since the bills that are before you that affect the employment department are primarily related to our employment insurance system, I wanted to provide some additional information about our employment insurance program. Some background. Unemployment insurance began in 1935 as part of the Social Security Act. Like accident and health insurance, this is an insurance program that protects against financial hardship of laid-off workers. It's not welfare. It's not a handout. It's indeed insurance. And what it provides is the ability to have stable and experienced workers remain in communities during tough economic times so that they don't have to leave the community to look for work. It also helps to maintain purchasing power in communities. So the unemployment insurance benefits that laid-off workers use to purchase goods and services help avoid secondary layoffs from employers or from workers who provide those goods and services. Some just general information. We have a booklet before you, too, that we give to claimants. This is the services handbook. But some general information about unemployment insurance is that regular benefits, laid-off workers can receive up to 26 weeks of regular benefits. During periods of high unemployment, there's the opportunity for extension of those weeks. And currently we're in two extensions, so workers can receive up to 65 weeks of unemployment insurance benefits. The maximum claim or weekly benefit amount for our claimants is $405 per week. The minimum amount is $94 per week. And the average is currently $233 per week. Just some very general eligibility criteria. To be eligible for unemployment insurance, a worker must have earned at least $1,000 during a one-year period and have worked in two quarters during that one-year period. They must become unemployed through no fault of their own. And for each week that, generally speaking, for each week that an unemployed worker claims benefits, they must be able, available, and actively seeking work. Unemployment insurance is a federal and state partnership. The federal government has many requirements to which the state must conform. If I could turn your attention to the back of this brochure, this is a diagram as to how unemployment insurance is funded. One tax is the Federal Unemployment Insurance Tax Act, FUTA, we refer to it as FUTA, and that's the dotted line you see on this diagram. And what FUTA is 0.8% or 0.8% of the first $7,000 in wages that employer pays, and it's collected by IRS and then resides in the U.S. Treasury. And part of that money comes back to the states to administer programs of the Employment Department, principally unemployment insurance, employment services, and labor market information. And then part of that still resides in the U.S. Treasury. They use that money to help pay for extensions during high periods of high unemployment, and they also use it to make loans to states who run out of unemployment insurance funds. And those states who do run out and make the borrow that money, pay it back to the U.S. Treasury with interest. The other tax that's also a based on employer payroll contributions is the state trust fund, and this is the solid line that you see on the diagram. And the sole purpose of these taxes is to pay unemployment insurance benefits to unemployed workers. The tax rate is between 1.2% and 2.5% of the first $26,000 in earnings for each worker each year. The rate that an employer pays is dependent on two things. One is the amount of money that's in the total trust fund, and I'll share some information more about that. And then also that individual employer's experience with the trust fund. That is, you know, their former employees or current employees, how much money they've used or accessed for those unemployment insurance benefits. Those are the two key things that determine how much an employer pays and the tax rate for the state trust fund tax. That money is collected by the Oregon Employment Department. If I could please turn your attention to the inside of the brochure. On the left-hand page is a diagram that shows the eight tax schedules that are set up in statute. Which schedule depends that employers will be subject to depends on how much money is in the total trust fund. The statute requires that the trust fund have enough money to cover an unemployment short or unemployment period with a 18 months of recession. That's the target and the goal. We have enough in reserve to cover us for 18 months of recession. The graph you see shows the years that we're in the various tax rates or tax schedules, as well as what the average tax rate is for each of the schedules. So you'll see in Schedule 1, the average tax rate for employers is 1.51%, all the way up to 3.1% in Schedule 8. Currently, we're in Schedule 4, and we projected to be in Schedule 5 in 2004. And as a note, in 2001, the legislature made changes to the tax schedules. They reduced the taxes in Schedules 3, 4, and 5 to better even out the tax rate that employers pay in replenishing the trust fund. On the next page, the top chart is a graph that shows the historical and projected future balances of the trust fund. That's the shaded gray area. Beginning in 1980. The dotted line reflects the minimum desired level of the trust fund to again cover that 18-month recessionary period that's set out in statute. So when this gray area is below the dotted line, that's a gap, and employers would find themselves in a higher tax schedule to bring the trust fund up to that dotted line. When the amount in the trust fund is above that dotted line, employers will find themselves in the lower schedules to again bring it down to that target. The bottom chart shows the amount of FUTA taxes that employers in the state have paid into the FUTA taxes. That's the gray bar. And the black bar depicts how much money has come back to the state in FUTA taxes. If you notice, from 1995 to the year 2000, our employers have paid much more into the FUTA taxes than were received back to the state. But if we updated this for years 2001-2002, you would see that we received much more in terms of FUTA funds back to the state than what we've in these most recent past years. Also, I wanted to turn your attention to this brochure that shows county by county in the year 2001 the amount of taxes employers paid into the system. and how much money, that's the bolded black area in each county, that unemployment insurance benefits went back to those counties. And the bottom figure is the average unemployment rate for each county in 2001. As you can see, every county in the state received more in unemployment insurance benefits than they paid into the system. And the back of that page shows you the gain, is the same information, but just tallies the gain in each county for your information. So that's a quick, brief overview of the Employment Department Unemployment Insurance Program. I'd like to ask our Administrator for Workforce and Economic Research to come up and share some information with you about the economy and about economic information and workforce information that we share, that we provide to customers. Any questions about employment insurance at this time?
Thank you, sir. I have one question. Where does the gain come from, the federal unemployment fund?
It's money the employers have paid into the system, and so because of high unemployment, those monies are drawn back down to cover that unemployment. So that's where the gain comes from.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Who has that you would like to hear next?
I would ask that Graham Slater come up. Thank you, sir.
Please come. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Graham Slater, and as Greg said, I'm the Administrator of the Economic and Workforce Research Division of the Department. My handout looks like this, except yours won't have the writing on it that mine does. And rather than just tell you about the kinds of statistics that we produce, I would just like to take the first couple pages to share with you an update on the economy. And with it in your mind that this information comes from our department, and certainly I want to end up by saying, as your committee goes through the session, if you have additional needs for information about the economy, about the workforce, then we're definitely available to assist you with that. So looking at the top graph there, first of all, Oregon's unemployment rate, as you can see, and this is probably not great news to you, the unemployment rate did climb pretty substantially during the early part of this recession. We had been in that 4 to 5.5% range statewide, and we shot up to 8.1%, and it was a pretty rapid increase over a period of about a year in terms of months. The good news is that the unemployment rate has dropped down. Now, last month was at 7%. So we've certainly seen improvement, but definitely not the kind of pace of improvement that most people would like in terms of recovery. The graph at the bottom of the page links directly to what Greg's been telling you about the unemployment insurance system. If you just kind of look across 97, 98, 99, you can see that we roughly had about 100,000 unemployed, sometimes as low as 80,000 unemployed in Oregon. And that number literally on the raw monthly count of unemployed, it doubled during the worst part of the recession. And you can see that dotted line going from 80,000 in late 2000 up to just over 160,000. The solid line there is seasonally adjusted, and what we try to do there is take out the fact that farm employment will go down at certain times of the year, and so will construction and so on. So even on the seasonally adjusted basis, you can still see a very significant increase. If you turn the page, excuse me, we have a map that shows unemployment rates for the whole of last year. And the interesting thing here is that just about the entire state is in these darker shadings. Darker shadings mean higher unemployment. And when I testified 2 years ago to different groups of the legislature, this graph looked nothing like this. The whole western side of the state would have been the white color, which was under 6%. And I remember making the comment that, in fact, there was a bill last time that would have tried to attempt to have the economy in eastern Oregon similar in health to the economy in western Oregon. And the sad comment on this recession is that that's essentially been achieved, but it's because western Oregon has got a whole lot worse, not eastern Oregon getting a whole lot better. I would point out, particularly for the chair's interest, that the most significant increase in unemployment insurance claims that we saw during this recession was in our Hillsborough office, and the second highest was in Beaverton. That is not the kind of recession trend we normally see in Oregon, where we think of Coos Bay or Roseburg or some of those communities having the biggest suffering. Okay, turning to page B3, we now shift our focus from the unemployment side to employment. And essentially, the line you see there shows the very strong growth in the early to mid-90s. This is total employment in Oregon, just every month. What's the count of employment when we adjust for seasonality? You can see towards the late 90s, the slope of that line slows down a little bit. And if you remember the Asian financial crisis, that was what was going on there, but we still kept growing. It didn't put us into recession. And then you can see that as of November 2000, we hit the top. And when we slid downwards for 16 months, and even though we did turn the corner last March, just under a year ago, you can see that line there does not suggest a real strong turning of the corner. And you've probably heard comments at the national level and for us of a jobless recovery, and that's essentially what we're seeing. Most people do believe that we hit bottom and have turned the corner, but it's not a rapid job growth kind of recovery. And in fact, if you look at the bottom of page B3, again referring to that difference from when I was here 2 years ago, in this graph, the white or the very light shading represents negative job growth. In other words, every county that's light has fewer jobs as of 2002 than that county had in 2001. And during the 90s, it would have been basically unthinkable to see the I-5 corridor west in Oregon with negative job growth. We just didn't see that at all. We saw it, again, some of the coastal counties, certainly Lake and some of those counties. But you can see that all through the Willamette Valley, we do see negative job growth over the year, starting to turn around in the last few months. But when we look at the year as a whole, it's still negative. On B4, this is an example of the kind of wage information that we have. We collect wages both by industry and by occupation. This one is just looking at the average wage for all Oregonians. And to me, it's just one more measure of the impact of the recession. We're not just talking more unemployed. We're not just talking job losses. But we're also saying that the people who were employed were earning less money last year. So even the ones that weren't laid off, they were actually making less. And you can see, and it's the first time in a good number of years, that the average income of an Oregonian in terms of wages declined. All of these are adjusted for inflation, so the number you see back in 1976, 34,000, that's in today's dollars. But it's still pretty interesting to think that the average Oregonian, when we've adjusted for inflation, has never been better off than they were way back in 76. We've never made up for some of those losses during the big recession in the early 80s. And then finally, the one line below the graph, we conducted a survey in July of last year, repeated one that we'd done in July of 2000, and one of the most startling things from that, another measure of the recession, is that in the 12 months leading up to July 2000, employers had attempted to fill 828,000 openings. The vast majority of those are just turnover, people moving from one company to another, not permanently leaving the workforce, not necessarily brand new jobs, but just that churning that goes if we move from Burger King to McDonald's or this hospital to this clinic. By the time that we got to June of 2002 in this current recession, that number had dropped to 576,000. That's a really important number because as we in the employment department and many others try to help people find work, here's a 30% drop in the number of openings that are even out there available. Okay. Turning the page to B5, just some quick background. As you probably have figured out, it is our goal to provide the most current, accurate information we can. We have a staff of about 60 people, primarily funded by the federal government, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and the Department of Labor. So we collaborate with them so that our numbers are comparable to the ones from California and Washington and so on, so that when you hear statements like Oregon has the second highest unemployment rate in the nation, which we do right now, that's meaningful, because Alaska, who's number one, calculated their unemployment rate the same way we did, and so on all across the nation. I won't go into the detail on the statutory authority. I'd be happy to discuss it with any of you if you're interested in that. But I do want to mention towards the bottom of the page just how we provide this information. We could be a group of people just churning out numbers that sit in our computers or on our shelves. But in 2002, we responded to more than 13,000 customer information requests. We distributed 476,000 publications. One of them is Careers. It's a newspaper that goes to every high school and community college and one-stop workforce center. We were getting about 20,000 visitors to our website per month by the end of the year, which isn't a lot compared with some websites, but when you consider that it's statistical and economic information, that's a pretty high count by most people's measure. And then finally, we gave more than 350 presentations that included, more than 13,000 people in the audiences. So we work really hard to get out to workforce boards and schools and State Board of Education, those kind of groups, career fairs at schools, kind of a whole realm of people that we think our information could be useful to. On page B6, the graph in the middle just tells you which kinds of customers we responded to. And probably the primary thing I'd point out there is that private employers and employer associations are the number one customer. And that surprises some people. On number B7, turning the page, gives you a little feel at the top of where our customers come from across Oregon. And certainly they're actually more heavily spread in the rural areas outside of Portland than the overall population of the state would suggest. That's because in some of those areas, our economists are the only economists for many hundreds of miles around. So we tend to be the source for this kind of information. At the bottom of the page is a little example of the kinds of information we provide. Industry employment trends and forecasts was the number one, and that's often questions like, how many jobs are there in the lumber industry? What's going on with high tech? Those kind of questions. Labor force statistics primarily would be the unemployment rate. What's happening to the number of unemployed? How is it changing across the state? Occupation wage rates, pretty self-evident. The general economy, of course, we've just had a lot of questions. Are we in recession? Are we in recovery? Come give a speech to this chamber or this Rotary Club or so on. And then the only other one I'll mention, the occupational employment trends and forecasts. That one's real important, not just to young people thinking about their future career plans, and not just to adults, maybe who have been laid off and are thinking about changing careers, but also to the community colleges, the private career schools, who use our information to figure out which classes they should be offering. In other words, which classes will help people find jobs and careers down the road. Finally, on page B8, the graph at the top talks about the use of our website, and self-explanatory, it's gone up dramatically through the last few years. And then I just want to highlight a couple of the bullets at the bottom. By the Workforce Investment Act, which is federal legislation, we are required to have three primary groups of customers: private sector businesses and their associations, workforce boards all across the state and the statewide board, and the educational establishment. And so in that first bullet, you see those groups reflected. We do a lot of work for the state workforce board and the regional boards, not just presentations, but kind of behind-the-scenes number gathering. And then the third bullet I wanted to emphasize, because some of our key customers use this information for major policy initiatives, and one of those is the Office of Economic Analysis, Tom Potowski's group, and they're the ones, of course, that make the forecasts on which the general fund and lottery fund revenues are based. So we feed Tom with all of our employment statistics for what's going on in each of the industries. He then takes that and makes his best forecast of what's going to happen in the next 2, 3, 4 years. That closes my testimony. I'd be happy to take any questions. And again, I'd be happy to assist you in any way during the session.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, both of you. I want to thank you for the good service that I've always received from the Employment Department. I certainly am one of the people on one of those bar graphs who's called you repeatedly with questions and information, and the research division particularly has always been very helpful. I just had a couple of questions, though. I wanted to ask you how many workers, or approximately how many workers, are now still unemployed in Oregon who have exhausted their benefits and all extensions?
You can look at me. Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I don't have that number on the top of my head, and I would have to talk to our unemployment insurance folks, unless the person behind me has that number.
I don't have the information.
Okay.
So I can get it.
We can certainly provide that to you. So the number of people that have exhausted benefits is what you're looking for.
I guess what I'm getting at is I know there are a significant number of people that have run out of benefits in Oregon. I'm just curious what the magnitude of that is.
Right.
So I would appreciate it if you
okay.
could get
and Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, just a couple quick comments on that. Number one, of course, as Greg said, we are running 65 weeks of unemployment insurance now, so the people that normally would have exhausted benefits at 26 weeks, many of those still are receiving benefits, so that will help that situation, and that's because we are in a recession. And then secondly, I just want to make the differentiation that in our statistics, all of those unemployed are counted. The count of 120,000, 160,000, that includes all the unemployed, regardless of any affiliation that they've had with the unemployment insurance system. So they may have never received benefits, they may have run out of benefits, but for my purposes, we're still counting them. For the payments, obviously, they may have exhausted. We'll definitely get back to you, though.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. And that actually is a good lead-in to my next question. Do you know what percentage of workers in Oregon who are unemployed don't qualify for benefits even to begin with, just by virtue of something about their situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I know that the number of unemployed individuals who do not receive benefits varies with the economy. During the 90s, it was sometimes in the 40 to 50% range. In other words, 40 or 50% of the unemployed were receiving benefits. I think that during the recession, it went up, and I think the number is probably in the 70 to 75% range of the unemployed that do receive benefits. But I would want to get back to you on that to confirm that, unless...
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, it's not a number we have readily available because all these folks, of course, don't file, but we can see if we can make a projection for you just to give you an idea as to that figure.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. When you said that it was 45 to 50% receiving benefits before we hit this current recession, why is it so low? I mean, why would there be half of people out of work not qualifying at all?
Hey, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I feel like I'm on the UI territory here a little bit. From a statistical point of view, there are some good reasons. When the economy is really good, a lot of people, for example, are coming into the workforce who have never worked before. And right there, that would be a reason why they wouldn't qualify for unemployment insurance benefits.
Because they
haven't worked at all in some cases. They're brand new to the workforce. Maybe people who had given up a few years earlier when the economy wasn't as good and they haven't worked for 5 years, they choose now. We call them re-entrants in our world, re-entering the labor force, or new entrants who have never been in it before. So during those really good years, you've got a lot of people coming in that you're trying to find jobs for, and they may not even have the basic work history to qualify for unemployment insurance. Then some of the other reasons, as Greg mentioned earlier, are the no-fault kind of issues. And Greg or Tom could certainly address those perhaps later in a more detailed response to you. But in a recession, when there's lots and lots of people being laid off with immediate work history, that's why that percentage tends to go up. Because now the makeup of the unemployed is a whole lot more people who were working last week and have been laid off. And so the percentage that are covered of the unemployed goes up.
Thank you. Representative Shaw, will you be our last question for this, provided there's no more, and we'll move on to our public hearing.
Just quick. On your graph here, you got some real optimistic projections here. How long, in 83, you're almost down to zero. How long, if this were to, I suppose I could just take a ruler and stretch it out, but do you see this ever happening again in the near future, like what we see here in 83? That's what I want to ask, as far as your funds running out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffner, with the statute that sets out the tax schedules, and it's a self-adjusting mechanism, we would hope we would not see this kind of gap that occurred in the early 80s. But it's also heavily dependent on the economy. If we really go into a long recession and we keep drawing down just unemployment insurance, it's not out of the question, but we certainly think that the statutes are set that really help us fund it so we don't have that big gap.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
At this time, I will end the informational hearing, or excuse me, informational meeting, and open public hearings on HB 2161. Well, Megan, read the summary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2161 allows domestic employers to file unemployment tax reports on a quarterly basis.
Morning.
Hi, good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Renee Bryant. I'm the manager of the Unemployment Insurance Tax Section of the Employment Department. I'm allowing everyone to get a copy of the testimony. House Bill 2161 is introduced to allow domestic service employers to file unemployment insurance reports quarterly. Currently, all employers except for domestic employers report on a quarterly basis and pay their taxes on a quarterly basis. In 1999, the legislature approved an annual reporting of employment-related taxes for employers reporting domestic service only. This was at the urging of employers with domestic service to ease their reporting requirements. However, since that time, several employers of domestic service have expressed a desire to continue reporting these taxes on a quarterly basis. Changing the language in ORS 657-571 from shall to may will provide that flexibility that will allow employers to report either annually or quarterly. The agencies involved with the combined reporting program have systems that can accept the annual or quarterly reporting for these services, and that's going to require little or no cost to implement. We can do that right now. That's the sum total of the bill.
That's it, huh?
That's it.
Counts again.
I timed it for that reason.
Stayed with his hand in the cookie jar on that one. Great. Are there any questions regarding this lengthy bill? Seeing none, thank you for coming here today. At this time, we will now open testimony for House Bill 2162. I'm sorry, we'll close 2161. Now open 2162.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, I'm Renee Bryant, manager of UI Tax. I'm putting on my cheaters here because this is a little bit more involved. I'm going to have to read a little bit more slowly for you.
Okay.
The purpose of House Bill 2162 is to amend Oregon law to treat unemployment insurance tax-paying Indian tribes as in the same manner as we treat unemployment insurance tax-paying political subdivisions and nonprofit nonprofit entities with respect to charging for extended benefits. And here's the reason why. In 2001, the Oregon Legislative Assembly passed House Bill 3596. That bill changed unemployment insurance to treat Indian tribes similarly to local governments, political subdivisions, and nonprofit entities. This was required because of federal legislation. As a condition of state conformity with federal requirements, unemployment insurance is now required for all services performed for Indian tribes. Under the law, Indian tribes are given the same option as all other employers, local governments, political subdivisions, and nonprofit entities, to either pay their quarterly unemployment insurance taxes or to reimburse the unemployment insurance trust fund for all the benefits paid. Under the Federal-State Extended Unemployment Compensation Act of 1970, during periods of high unemployment, an extension of benefits, just like we're in right now, may be available to unemployed individuals. Under extended benefits, there's a shared responsibility between the federal government and local governments or state governments to pay for those extended benefits. The federal and state government each pays 50%. With respect to EB, local governments and political subdivisions and nonprofit entities, and Indian tribes electing to reimburse for benefits, are required to reimburse all of the extended benefits. In other words, for that portion of extended benefits being paid right now, those entities reimburse the trust fund for that full amount. Local governments, political subdivisions, and nonprofit entities that choose to pay taxes rather than to reimburse are charged for one half of the extended benefits. However, during the development and implementation of 3596 in 2001, there was an oversight in the language, and to charge tax-paying Indian tribes one half of the extended benefits. That part was not placed in the bill. So that's this little tiny piece where right now Indian tribes are not charged for one half of the tax-paying Indian tribes are not charged for one half of the extended benefits charged to their account. Unemployment insurance tax rates are based on employers' experience with unemployment benefits or charges and their taxable payroll. The taxpaying employer does not directly pay the charge, but it is used in the calculation of their tax rate. So, this would amend the chapter to add language to treat taxpaying Indian tribes similarly to taxpaying local governments, political subdivisions, and nonprofit entities for the purpose of charging extended benefits only. House Bill 2162 will not affect Indian tribes that have elected to be reimbursing employers for the purpose of the chapter. What we found out when we were researching this is that there are currently 8 Indian tribes that had benefits chargeable to their account based upon extended benefits during the year 2002. Only one of those tribes would have had their tax rate affected by 0.1%. That would have a negligible impact on the trust fund, but this would make all employers treated the same. So that's why we are presenting this bill. It's very simple to understand. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Seeing no questions, I will.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thanks. Renee, I noticed there's no emergency clause on this bill, and it's not retroactive. I assume it doesn't say that it is. So this would be effective next January for benefits that would be paid out after that time. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, that's correct. There's no effort to make this retroactive. I don't believe that legally we could go back and do that anyway. But this would be prospective only.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I had one other thing to answer. We did not anticipate it being called on this bill quite so early, and we had not been in touch with the tribes before last week. And for that reason, we ask that any work session be deferred for a period of time to give the tribes an adequate time to respond to the bill.
I can accommodate that. Anything further? Great. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2162. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2163. At this time, will Tom Ewing come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2163 specifies circumstances in which a hearing officer may dismiss a request for a hearing on a claim for unemployment benefits. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tom Ewing. I'm the Chief Hearing Officer of the Hearing Officer Panel. I'm here to speak on behalf of 2163. You already have written testimony. Let me just summarize what is there. This is essentially a housekeeping matter. ORS Chapter 657, which is the body of law that the Employment Department governs under, does not expressly give the department or the Hearing Officer Panel the authority to dismiss a case. The department some years ago promulgated an administrative rule to give it that authority. A couple of years ago, this issue was raised in an appellate case before the Court of Appeals. The case went nowhere. The court did not address this particular issue, but we thought that in the exercise of good caution, we should come before you and just clean up something that which is a vacuum. There are essentially seven conditions under which we'd be allowed to dismiss cases: if the request for hearing is withdrawn, if the person fails to provide information that allows us to schedule the hearing, if the person fails to appear at the hearing, if after the first decision a subsequent decision makes the case moot, if there is a failure to file a request for hearing within the time set by law, if the request for hearing is filed before an administrative decision issues, interestingly enough, that does happen. And finally, if the person requesting the hearing is not the interested party or is not a representative. Let me just say that there still is a fail-safe measure. If a party's request for hearing is failed, having met any of these seven conditions, the person can still, I should say six of the seven, the person can still appeal to the Employment Appeals Board. If the person fails to appear at hearing, the person can request a reopening before the hearing officer panel. I'd be happy to take any questions on this if you have any.
Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Today.
Thank you all.
We'll close the public hearing on 2163, and we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 160. I would call Tom Byerly. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Sure.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, you want to read the summary?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 160 permits the Director of Employment Department to combine decisions regarding eligibility for an amount of employment benefits with whether or not an individual has been paid benefits they are not entitled to. And this bill passed the Senate with no opposition, and there is a fiscal statement issued in the package as well.
Great. Thank you. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Byerly. I'm the Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance for the Employment Department. We see Senate Bill 160 as a matter of customer service. We are seeking the amendment of our laws that help us deal with benefit overpayments. As is typical in many states, a small percentage of our unemployment insurance claimants obtain benefits to which they were not entitled, and therefore we have to go after collection of these benefits. Right now, however, to handle these overpaid benefits, what normally happens is we write a decision that would find the claimant ineligible for benefits. That decision carries appeal periods that could carry on for upwards of maybe 2 months. After that appeal, those appeals and those benefit denials are exhausted, we then follow that up with an overpayment decision that says, now that this decision that found you ineligible for benefits has become final, you owe X number of dollars. What this bill would allow us to do is to combine the overpayment decision with the disqualifying decision so the claimants know right up front when they get that order what the full ramifications of that order is. What we've often experienced is someone may have gone back to work, gotten one of these disqualifying decisions, didn't recognize that it created an overpayment. They read it, thought, well, geez, okay. Then later the overpayment decision comes along. The decision that found them ineligible was already final. They have no vehicle to go back and protest or appeal that decision. So in essence, they were kind of stuck and didn't have any way to exercise an appeal on that. We see this as a way to combine them again and to get the both issues on the same decision and to help inform the claimants. It would also allow us the ability to begin collection sooner on those claimants that have found overpaid rather than wait, like I say, several months after the original decision has become final. One of the things I want to make sure that we're aware of is the proposed change only affects the information in the overpayment decision. It doesn't affect anything else that we would do. We obviously would not continue. We would not collect benefits until the decision finding them ineligible was final and all appeals were exhausted. Under the bill, we expect to collect an additional $60,000 in overpaid benefits. The $60,000 is really not new money. It represents a mild increase in recoveries as a result of collecting on some accounts at an earlier date. It's not anticipated this would greatly increase our recoveries, as we already have a relatively high recovery rate of this type of overpayment. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, I think we can conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. At this time, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 160. Anything else for the good of the committee? I believe this committee will stand adjourned until February 19th, Wednesday.
Excellent.